So it's our rachamim. It's the rachamim. It's the chesed that women personify. That calls for. So it's a sense in which a woman reflects back that attribute of God, that aspect of God. Yeah. Okay. So let's go to it's something about the birth process, which I want to go back to. And here I want to go back to the image of the Vlad, the infant. Okay, the infant in the brickwork. When the woman is involved in the avodah parech, the harsh labor in making the bricks, she spontaneously miscarries, and the infant then rises up to heaven and becomes integrated into the kisei hakavod. There's a sense in which once her womb opens and she gives birth to a stillbirth, right? Nothing comes of her labor. Yet, when the infant is integrated into God, it's almost as if his rachamim. Now here there's a play on the words, rechem and rachamim. Rechem is the term for womb. Her womb is open and she gives birth to a stillborn child. But it's rechamim, the compassion of God that's opened up by the opening up of her womb. His womb, let's say, God's rachamim is opened up, and he gives birth as a result to the Bnei Yisrael, the Israelites, right? As a result, the nation of Israel is born. Now, there's something about the reciprocity, the mirroring image of God's rachamim through women that happens in the Midrashim narrative, all, you know, through Plotit, through Rachel, and through Rachel Imenu in the final Midrash. There's something about women's rachamim that's being reflected in God's acts in history here at this point. Anything else? Anything else? Yeah.
The voice of the woman is such a private part of her.
Yeah.
But once she allows that voice to be heard.
Heard, finally. There's something.
That becomes much more powerful because it's not usual if it's something that's a private part of her. So that has more meaning, power.
And I think what's fascinating is that the final midrash is that the privacy of the woman is that it's both a source for erotic desire, in the case of Yaakov, and it's also the source of evoking God's desire or God's involvement. There's a sense in which it goes beyond. It's transcendent. It involves also God. God goes from a transcendent mode to an immanent mode there, there's something almost erotic about that too. Yeah, such a strength.
There is such a strength to it that it has to be controlled.
It's almost dangerous.
And so, of course, there's the interpretation of why women's voice shouldn't be heard, because it's dangerous. And the other thing that comes to my mind is the word Dean.
Dean.
And the story of Dina.
Dina, yeah. I think that's a... Until really this generation, and I think this generation of women scholars and teachers and students, there's this whole proliferation of women's voices, which is really wonderful.
She's the source of life. She delivers life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that firm connection there, how close to the world, which is close to the whole creation in life.
Uh-huh.
You get access.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something vital that, yeah, because she contains life within herself, yeah.
And also, women know that they have more power to take suffering, co-opted.
Right.
Woman has the
power. The eats of an, yeah.
And if the woman cries, as you said, it has a stronger effect already. This is a woman that is up to here.
Yeah. Okay, yes, sir.
Not to take away from your eloquence, because I want to tell a story of
Pashkar. Oh, please.
Not the,
no, not at all. Okay. Everything is an addition.
I have a friend of Judy Rubin here, who's in her 80s. She's an Auschwitz survivor. So she told me this story at 22. She's in Auschwitz. She is collecting, she's cleaning the windows of the crematoria. But it happened that there were black berries near the crematoria, and she put it, there was the cup to do everything in, and she collected these black berries, and she just finished filling up this little cup, and she bumps right into an SS guard, and four other women, they are sentenced to death. It's Friday, and they found a woman named Esther, who's in charge of the barracks. And Esther says, I'm sorry, I can't do anything, but let's light Hanukkah candles with the wicks. So Judy said, it was the longest night of my life because I thought I would be dead at 10 o'clock the next morning on the gallows.
For collecting blackberries.
Well, because of the punishment, right? So there's five women. Somewhere, somebody must have bribed somebody because it never happened. That's the good news, thank God. Now, Judy told me in her Emily Not chapters that he sent clothing to Israel, and the ladies ran out of energy, and Judy said there was one family that she, in her own words, were as poor as church mice. So she would send them money.
Synagogue mice.
They would send in her private pocket, she would make her donation. Turns out, this Esther, she sure saved them. She never saw Esther again. But it turned out Esther emigrated to Israel, and Esther would go on to be the sasta of the poor family with quintuplets.
Mm.
Yes. I don't know how to tell the story well. But the point is, she said to me, Ellie, she saved five people, and she got quintuplets.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is beautiful.
And then she just said, unfortunately, this was revealed to her. Esther, unfortunately, has been dead a year.
Uh-huh.
So she never got to thank Esther.
But was Esther aware of the quintuplets before she died? Yeah, but if she was alive when the quintuplets were born?
I hope so. And actually, wow. Judy showed
there them. Must have been.
Judy showed her album pictures of thanks of these people.
Uh-huh.
And not to go too far, but I must add as well, Judy's a speaker.
Uh-huh.
She told me one time she was supposed to speak on the miracle of Hanukkah. To make a long story short, she was introduced at the tea to someone who had been in a rag, a smart tooth, in the concentration camp. Like you talked about the circumstances. Somebody gave birth at Auschwitz, left her baby in the woods. Baby survived. Decades passed. And this woman comes to the tea, and Judy was friends with her mother. Her mother's name was Vera. But she had two Hungarian survivors come to live in Toronto.
Yeah, it was the chances, right.
But she said during the days of the concentration camp, they were good friends. And the miracle.
So they know.
Everyone was crying at the tea. And this lady, you know what I'm trying to say, the lady, and Judy, she did that for me.
Yeah. And it is, the interesting thing is the redemption is that this redemption is that it's saying that there is an agency.
Yes.
to redemption. And I think this is where I'd like to end, is the agency of redemption lies in our hands. It's our voices that God needs to hear. In prayer and in expression and learning, there is a desire. God desires to hear our voices. And there's a strength there too. And I think that's ultimately what's going to bring about the ultimate geula, that we have to be heard and we have to hear each other. And I want to bless you with many years of learning, and I've really enjoyed learning with you. You've been tremendous, and I want to thank you very much.